Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Vanatu Sahabiryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaurya Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Janamejaya said, "What did the God of justice do for which he was cursed? Who is the Brahmana ascetic from whose curse the God had to be born in the Shudra caste?" Vaishampayana said, "There was a Brahman known by the name of Mandavya. He was conversant with all duties and was devoted to religion, truth, and asceticism. The great ascetic used to sit at the entrance of his hermitage at the foot of a tree, with his arms upraised in the observance of the vow of silence. As he sat there for years together, one day there came into his asylum a number of robbers laden with spoil. A bull in Bharata's race. Those robbers were then being pursued by a superior body as guardians of the peace. The thieves, on entering that asylum, hid their booty there, and in fear concealed themselves thereabout before the guards came. But scarcely had they thus concealed themselves when the constables in pursuit came to the spot. The latter, observing the rishi sitting under the tree, questioned him, 'O king,' saying, 'O best of brahmanas, which way have the thieves taken? Point it out to us so that we may follow it without loss of time.' Thus questioned by the guardians of peace, the ascetic, O king, said not a word, good or otherwise, in reply. The officers of the king, however, on searching that asylum, soon discovered the thieves concealed thereabout together with the plunder. Upon this, their suspicion fell upon the Muni, and accordingly they seized him with the thieves and brought him before the king. The king sends him to be executed along with his supposed associates. The officers, acting in ignorance, carried out the sentence by impaling the celebrated rishi. Having impaled him, they went to the king with the booty they had recovered. But the virtuous rishi, though impaled and kept without food, remained in that state for a long time without dying. The rishi, by his ascetic power, not only preserved his life, but summoned other rishi to the scene. They came there in the night in the form of birds, and beholding him engaged in ascetic meditation, though fixed on that stake, became plunged into grief. Telling that best of brahmanas who they were, they asked him, saying, 'O brahmana, we desire to know what has been thy sin, for which thou hast been made to suffer the tortures of impalement.'" Section 108. Vaishampayana said, "Thus asked the tiger amongst munis, then answered those rishis of ascetic wealth, 'Whom shall I blame for this? In fact, none else than my own self hath offended against me. After this, O monarch, the officers of justice, seeing him alive, informed the king of it. The latter, hearing what they said, consulted with his advisors, and came to the palace and began to pacify the rishi fixed on the stake. The king said, 'O thou best of rishis, I have offended against thee in ignorance. I beseech thee to pardon me for the same. It behooveth thee not to be angry with me.' Thus addressed by the king, the Muni was pacified. Beholding him free from wrath, the king took him up with the stake and endeavoring to extract it from his body. but not succeeding therein, he cut it off at the point just outside the body. The Muni, with a portion of the stake within his body, walked about and in that state practiced the austerest of penances and conquered numberless regions attainable but unattainable by others. For the circumstances of a part of the stake being within his body, he came to be known in the three worlds by the name of Ani Mandavya, Mandavya with the stake within. One day that Brahmana, acquainted with the highest truth of religion, went unto the abode of the God of Justice. Beholding the God there seated on his throne, the Rishi reproached him and said, "What, pray, is that sinful act committed by me unconsciously, for which I am bearing this punishment? Oh, tell me soon, and behold the power of my asceticism." The God of Justice thus questioned replied, "O thou of ascetic wealth, a little insect was once pierced by thee on a blade of grass. Thou bearest now the consequence of that act. O Rishi, as a gift, however small, multiplieth in respect of its religious merit, so a sinful act multiplieth in respect to the woe it bringeth in its train." On hearing this, Ani Mandavya asked, "O tell me truly, then, when this act was committed by me?" Told in reply by the God of Justice that he had committed it when a child, the Rishi said, "That shall not be a sin which shall be may be done by a child up to the 12th year of his age from birth. The scriptures shall not recognize it as sinful. The punishment thou hast inflicted upon me for such a venial offense hath been disproportionate in severity. The killing of a Brahmin involves a sin that is heavier than the killing of any other living being. Thou shalt therefore, O God of Justice, have to be born amongst men even in the Shudra order. From this day I establish this limit in respect of the consequence of acts, that an act shall not be sinful when committed by one below the age of 14, but when committed by one above that age, it shall be regarded as sin." Vaishampayana continued, "Cursed for this fault by that illustrious Rishi, the God of Justice had his birth as Vidura in the Shudra order. Vidura was well versed in the doctrines of morality and also politics and worldly profit. He was entirely free from covetousness and wrath, possessed of great foresight and undisturbed tranquility of mind. Vidura was ever devoted to the welfare of the Kurus." So the sage then, he established that. Why does it have to be the age 14? The Shastras give two ages. One is that of 14, and one is that of 16. 16 means they become an adult. 14 means they've attained puberty, so they start understanding what's going on in the world. Right. So both of these ages are used. So I would see it that both will be correct, that either some of the reaction comes because they start to know, and then full reaction comes at 16, or you could take it if they're very pure in mind and all that, then it will come at 16. But if they're not pure, you know, they like to look at the girls and move with the girls and do all that kind of nonsense, then at 14, then they'll get the brunt of any sinful reaction they get. And the best part about it, which is not so much mentioned here, is before that, since the sin has to go somewhere, it goes to the parents. Right? So those parents who just think, "Oh, cute little child," and, "Oh, they're doing nonsense and offending the devotees, but, oh, they're cute, it doesn't matter, they're kids." It's true, this child will not suffer any sinful reaction. The parent will. Like that. Does that make sense?
But also it does change on the mind of the child, so then he will be to do those things.
Okay, yes. The point being brought out is that it will, even in the child, though it won't create a reaction, it will create some scar. So the child will have a tendency to behave in this way when they get older. See, basically, the environment you're in up to five, then, and that can be calculated either from time of conception or time of birth, that environment will give your foundation of your kind of like character, personality, or nature. Because that's the time parents, they put in so much attention, your religious foundation is there, your understanding that there's such a thing as right and wrong. General kind of unconscious behavior that you'll pick up from the family and the environment, that is established. Then from there up to puberty, then more there it is trained in, right? But still, one may not be so conscious of the importance of it. But then at this age, then at 14, then we can understand what is the consequences, what is going on, and then by 16 we're adult, right? But whatever, training can go on nicely up to 25, right? Does that make sense? Then from there, generally we will take that and ourselves, we will use this in our own practices. Does that make sense? So there's different stages where different things come in and all that. So the young means before time, that's the time when the parents give their full attention to the children. After that, then it's time when the teachers are given their time to give the full attention. Right? Then, after that, then again it comes back that then the child is then again with the family, the parents in that environment, and then they move forward with their own family life and the whole, social scene. Does that make sense? So idea in the Vedic culture is focus is most important. So when they're young, the parents are focused on the child in the middle, then the teacher is focusing on the child, and then after that, then it's a matter of practicing that, and then the family interacts as they would plan it. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, if the parents don't focus before five, and the teachers are not focusing or allowed to focusing in the middle, then the development will not be very good. Does that make sense? So this idea is that the parents, when the child's born, then they suddenly become very advanced and only interested in devotional service. And then when the child's older and they're worried that they're going to lose the connection with them, so now is their time to give their attention, and they have that divine right simply because of they being on the spot when the fluids were mixed. So that gives them full right for all this kind of sentimental things. Then the child will not turn out very good, right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. There's a time for everything. Like there was a study done that there's a time when children start to walk, somewhere around the first year. They get up, they start to walk. So then, at that time, they'll always learn to walk, right? Every kid learns to walk. But they found that there were studies where there were kids that somehow or another weren't allowed to walk at that time. It was like, something will happen to your knees or this or that. So then later on, then the kid was allowed to walk. But it was the wrong time. The kid never learned to walk. Right? So Krishna's arranged the time for everything. Time for the greatest amount of emotional, sentimental, physical input up to the age of five. Then after that, then is regulated training under the teacher. Then after that, then it's family life, the full social interaction with the parents, with the grandchildren, with the children, with the relatives, everything like that. Right? After the training. Right? Then human life runs perfectly. But if that somehow or another gets disordered, then the result will also be disordered. Right? It's a science. So it's just something to know that's how it works. Right? Otherwise, we see so many examples of when it's time for someone else to take charge, then, someone at an earlier stage decides, no, that's my time. And it hasn't worked out. It's never worked out like that. Does that make sense? So that's why there's a time for everything, right? Like you get up in the morning, that's the time for your bath, Mangal Arati, chanting, because that will give the best effect. Later in the day, it doesn't work as good. Right? Evening again is time for all these studies. Does that make sense? The winter time is the good time for academics. The summertime is the good time for arts. Does that make sense? Krishna's created it that there is a time for everything. Right? So, here then, we see that the sage is given this thing that before that, the child should not be burdened by this. Because they don't know, they're not trained. They have to be trained. They got the association of the parents, the teachers, the relatives, the community. Then they learn what to do, what not to do. Does that make sense? But then after this, as they... So, in other words, those boys that are proud that they figured out what girls are and that they're cool and everything like this, yes. Hari Bol, great, we applaud you. You know, you figured out that those things that don't wear a dhoti, then they're girls. You know, very intelligent. I'm impressed. But along with figuring that out, now all the sinful reactions that you commit, because of that, you get it yourself. But the good thing about it is your parents don't get it anymore, right? They just get the trouble of trying to work out all the nonsense now that you're up to, now that you've figured out what girls are, right? Whatever it is, the parents always get it, right? You know, it's like that. Yes.
Also, I heard that between 18 and 21, that is for boys, is the time when they consolidate their values. And the values actually, what do you
from,
that time?
From 18 to 21. It's actually from 16, but because of the modern culture, kind of maturity is about 2 years delayed. Mm-hmm. Like that. But otherwise, the normal thing is from 16, they're adult, so they start thinking like one. They'll start thinking anyway, but they actually generally have the maturity to deal with it at that time. You know, figure out their identity, understand who they are, move forward. But if they haven't grown up in more of a traditional background, then the modern culture delays it because everybody in the modern culture likes to keep kids stupid, right? Academically smart, but personally and emotionally stupid. It's because that gives you those extra few years of dependency where you can feel that you're actually of value to your child rather than I'm supporting my child's education and development, that's my value. No, but it's I have to, unless I personally do it, I get no benefit, right? You know, like previously, the idea was it's like a pujari does the puja, everyone else watches, everyone gets the benefit, everyone's happy because everyone has faith. But nowadays, lack of trust, lack of faith being the popular politically correct platform, then unless you personally, physically do it yourself, there's no mercy available. That's the modern concept. So therefore, unless I directly, personally deal with my child, then there is no benefit. There is no relationship. There is no connection. It's all finished. It's you know, done, over, you know, eternally, just, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So it's all based from that lack of faith, lack of trust, which is inherent in the modern culture. So that delays the maturity of the children. It doesn't adjust the effect of the modes. It means puberty will still come at the regular time. Adulthood still comes at 16. But basically 16 to through up to 22, that's your time when you most matured can learn things. Because at 22, sun becomes mature. The planet itself becomes mature in the chart. And then sun is ego. So at 22, kind of like the door closes to dealings that would happen very naturally that you could do without ego. Because the ego then comes up, and then after that it's basically what knowledge they're willing to accept you can give them. But at least you can watch and regulate the practices. So that's why then up to 25. Then at 25 the practices are in place, then you can you know, then that's time to, you know, move forward. Does that make sense? But otherwise, up to, basically, up to five, then, you know, they're open to anything. But they, you know, will be very naturally attached and comfortable in that situation, which is very good. They should be attached. They should be comfortable. They should feel very confident like that. Because that means then the family unit is very strong and they've picked up, they will get a lot of strength. They become very powerful. Like that. They don't get how much energy they get up to five is how powerful they'll be. Right? They get no energy, then the power is less. Then 5 to 10, then they slowly develop. It's in three groups, 5 to 7, 8 to 10, excuse me, that's 2, and then 11 to 12. So basically we see is that the best learning comes 8 to 10. Right? They're mature enough, but the ego is less. And so material interest is less, so they do real nicely. So 8 is nice, 9 is a little off, but good. 10 is the pure devotee age, the perfect age. It's like the perfection of every mother's dream. The kid is intelligent, very active, not lazy, interacts well with adults, is very respectful, you know, chants the 16 rounds, does everything perfectly, like that. Then comes 11, pre-adolescence. Then it all goes out the window. And that is the waning of the mother's influence on the child. Though no mother can acknowledge this, accept this, or understand this, because the only experience they have is their own child. But when you raise about hundreds and hundreds of children, you see the pattern. So 5 to 7, at 5, a kid can adjust to anything. No matter what his diet was, lifestyle, anything, they can adjust, right? Like we see, you know, one kid is there, he can't live without his sister, without his mommy, nothing. But you bring him over here, and mommy and sister go away, and he's perfectly fine. Right? Because at 5, you can adjust to anything like that. New place, new language, new anything. 6, then you kind of have your own idea. You're getting used to, I like these things that's going on at home. Before that, it's unconscious. It's just the way life is. Right? At 6, you start to go, hey, I like this. I don't like this. I like this thing. I don't like this thing. Right? Like that. You know, I like the French fries. I don't like the sub juice. Right? You know? Like that kind of thing. I like the sweets, I don't like the sub juice, you know. I like the pizza, I don't like the sub juice, you know. It's like, you know, like that, you know. It's just, that's what started happening at 6. Then at 7, it's fixed. This is who I am. Hey, hello, here I am. I eat this, this, this. I don't do this, this, this. You know, and if I, you know, like that. So that's why the recommendation is 5. Right? Because the later it gets, the more they have their own identity, the more difficult. Like that. Also we see is that the odd years are odd and the even years are nice, right? But it kind of works okay. So then 8 goes really well. They can study nice. The feet are on the ground. They do really well. 9's okay. They start to, you know, a little bit more who I am, you know. As long as they like to do something, it works. They don't like to do something, a little bit more difficult. 10, the pure devotee age. And everybody thinks they're the most fabulous and all that. 11, then they start to go funny. Because pre-adolescence, that means they start to take on the qualities of adolescence, which is being a little thick-skinned, right? They're insensitive, don't notice their surroundings, everything like that. But it has its advantage to the teachers in training because they're insensitive to the surroundings, so they don't care about making a mistake. So therefore, they can learn something new and practice it and make a mistake, and they don't care what anybody else will say. Right? So that goes great. So because from 11 to 15, that's the time when one's very attracted, not so much to memorizing. Like from 5 to 10, memorize anything, don't care what it means, what it's for, it's fun. Right? But starting about 11, you start to wonder, why am I doing this? What's it for? You know, by 13, definitely, you know, what is this for? But up to 15, that's the time when they want to learn skills. Right? Means, what is, you know, like I said, before that you memorize it, after that you learn the skill, how to apply it. And skill means practice, skill means making mistakes. Right? But because the ego is so big, and the consideration of anybody else is so small, you'll learn really good. So it's a great advantage for teachers, an absolute disaster for parents, and especially for mothers. But don't worry, no mother will ever understand this. So then that's the time for learning that, right? The skills, not for learning how to smile and please the ladies. That's the time to learn the skills that you're going to learn for the rest of your life. Because after that, you won't learn them very well. Right? Take for example, a kid moves to a new country, new language, In 3 months, he's speaking the language. Come back after 3 years, the parents still cannot talk the language. Why? Because the parents' ego is such that they won't make a mistake in front of anybody else. Therefore, they won't practice it. Because the only place to practice it is out on the street where everybody else is. But they won't make a mistake. Kid will say anything, say it backwards, say it upside down. Doesn't matter. Everyone gets the idea, they laugh, but kid's ego is such that it doesn't matter. Who cares? These adults are stupid. What are they laughing for? Right? Like that. So that is the science, what goes on there. Then at 16, they become an adult. Right? Means up to 15, you're a kid. So a 15-year-old, he's the top of the pile. He's the biggest punk around. Right? So he looks down upon all the others under him, and he's the biggest guy there. 16, they become adult. It reverses. Now they're the youngest adult. They don't look back at the kids. They look forward at the adults. Right? And they'll relate with them. They'll work with them. So you have the advantages, like kind of like you have of the... Now what happens is like a line. Now what happened in the how you say? The 5 to 7, then the 8 to 10, and then there's like 13 to 15. These are the three stages. Spaced out, focused, and then too much ego. But it's good for practicing skills, right? Same thing now you'll get, 16 to 18, 19 to 21, 22 to 25. It's the same thing, but now in more maturity, right? Just like the seven planets, they go through the seven chakras up to 50 years of age, 7 years each one. Then at 50, it goes back to the beginning again and goes through the same pattern, but now more mature. So it's the same kind of thing. You get, it's like a mirror, that reflection. So 16 to 18, they're like the 5 to 7 in that they're spaced out. They don't know they're the new adult on the block. 5 to 7, they're the new kid on the block. So they're trying to figure out who they are, their identity, what's important for them, who they really are, like this. 16 is not so bad. 17 is really crazy. 18, it starts to settle down. 19, then you have a real bona fide student. 19 to 21 is the best studying age there is of any time in one's life. One again at that age, like an 8 to 10 year old, can change anything, throw out anything, learn anything new, like that, but one has the maturity to do it very seriously, right? 8 to 10, you do it because you like everybody and you like the atmosphere, so you do it with them. This is, you do it because you're an adult, you want to do this, you go for it. Then at 22, then, as we mentioned, then the door closes again, the ego comes up, and then it's very, you can't teach much to them. Like that. Very carefully you can teach, but not much. Up to 25. So then they practice what they've done from the 21 to 19. And then at 25, then they're a person of the world, and then they get to apply whatever they've done. Right? And then after this, then it works in, instead of 3 year groupings, it starts working in 5 year. Like that. Up to, I think, about 40, 50, like that. Then it starts in 10 year, like that. Right? Then after that, you croak. Right? So, okay. Does that make sense? So this is the psychology of how the kids work, the education works. And it's a scientific pattern that, unless you learn it from basically someone else, or you have the opportunity to observe it by watching hundreds of thousands of kids, you will not catch this. No one should ever think just because they were somehow or another capable of biologically producing a child that that makes them qualified to know all these things. It won't happen. This is science. This is not sentiment. Right? Therefore, it's an advantage to people that someone who has one kid or two kids or three kids, if they listen to someone who's trained hundreds of kids, they will do better. The training of their kids will go smoother. Otherwise, they can't figure out, why is my teenager not relating to me? Why don't they care? Why this and that? And so what's the solution? Rather than the Vedic one, put them with the teacher. Let the teacher work it out. This is the time for the teacher. The teacher knows what to do. In fact, this is a great time for the teacher. Punks are great people to train. But then the parent thinks, oh no, I'm losing the relationship. I have to pull them in more. Bring them home. Keep them at home all day. That way then I'll establish the relationship. And what happens? Boink, 16 years old, out the door with some girl, some floozy. And the mother wonders, what happened? I did everything. I gave everything. But because they didn't know the science, they were ignorant, therefore they got the bad result. And all you have to do is look at practically everyone in the Western culture who follows this, and you can see the result. But because of the wonderfulness of Krishna's creation, that he created Mother Yashoda as the, how you say, the archetypical mother, she can't figure out that Krishna's growing up and this and that. She still thinks he's a little baby, even though he's 16 years out, old, dancing with, you know, hundreds and thousands of, you know, gopis. She still thinks he's a little kid. So, therefore, every mother in the creation has that reflection. Right? But the other thing is every mother in the creation is also supposed to have a husband who is trained in the Gurukul system, who therefore encourages her to have the faith in the system and follow the system. But since that nowadays is politically incorrect and not very popular, therefore then mothers rule, yeah. And so then it goes on in this way, and so therefore then we just, instead of whatever's the newer generation of punks is worse than the last generation. They're more mamby-pamby. They're more, you know, this and that. You know, the women, you know, what to do? They have to go marry other women because, hey, there's no men around, so at least marry something that's sensitive rather than some gross thing that just, you know, leaves the socks all over the house, right? Like that. So in this way, then we have, you know, our modern situation. Right? Like that. Does that answer your question? Like that. So that's the science of the ages, right? Anybody wanted to. If anybody is wondering how we're running this school and why we educate certain things at certain times, like that, even though it makes absolutely no sense according to the Western paradigm, you just heard it. And in fact, you are the first people that have ever heard this in the last 25 years. I've never told anyone this because basically no one wants to understand it, so why waste your time? Like that.
Is the same system works also after the 5-year period and the 10-year period? After 25 and 50?
It means each age you'll see up to 3 is that, you know, 5, 6, 7. The 5 is the more spaced out, the 6 is the more solid, the 7 is the more ego, right? Then the 8, 9, 10 is like that. Like that. So you find like that. 11 and 12, because it's a junction between the two, it has elements of both. But you have to deal, you deal with it that they need the emotional interaction that someone below 10 needs, but they got the ego and the insensitivity of someone above. So it's the most tricky age. That's where the family loses control of the kid. Right? It's also said, according to the scriptures, now one could say, why? Okay, so if this is the time, and that means, in other words, from 5 to 10, technically then the parents do get an okay result with the kid. Nothing too much goes wrong. Right? Relationship goes on nicely. But from 11 then it starts to go. So that would be the age to send them to the school. But then the example is given that when you have a river and it floods in the rainy season, that when it's flooding, if you try to put the sandbags, then the sandbags and the people trying to put the sandbags get washed away. While when it's before the rainy season, you put all the sandbags in place, very peacefully they're there, the water comes up very peacefully and goes by and nobody even notices. So that's why in the Vedic system then, from 5 they go to the school, that way then the sandbags are in place when they hit adolescence. Right? So that's the thing. It's just a matter of whether one wants to function on Shreyas or Prayas. Right? Means, you know, future that I will get some very nice, qualified student back who will know how to behave, be responsible, how to deal in the family, and that will go on for the next 50 years. But in doing that, I lose this many years kind of that full interaction before that to train them. Or I can have them, or try to have them, let's say, for those training years, and squeeze as much as I can out of it, but at the same time, then I'll really lose them. And then for the next 50 years, I'll kind of have something ho-hum that, you know, isn't anything special anyway. But strangely enough, most people go for the squeeze what you can now and settle for something ho-hum for the next 50 years. I can't figure it out. But it's the most popular position that I've seen. You know, I'm not sure why, but, you know, you watch around you, kid after kid go down, and everybody goes on and just thinks, oh, it was them. You know, it's Yudhishthira Maharaj. It's like a branch of Yudhishthira Maharaj's, you know, when he's asked by Yaksha, who was Dharmaraj. Then what's the most amazing thing in the world? And he said that everybody is going to die and everybody thinks they're not going to. Right? Like that. So in the same way, it's a kind of a similar kind of thing, you know? Every kid who doesn't follow the traditional pattern bombs out, but everybody thinks they're going to do it and it's going to be successful. That's why one should be very respectful of Maya. She's good. She's really good. Right?
This age of 11 also comes in the midlife crisis time?
Is 11 the midlife crisis? Is that a reflection of the midlife crisis? Not so much. Midlife crisis is actually a Vedic thing. See, the modern doesn't know how to deal with it. It's a joint. Because what it is if you notice, midlife crisis comes around 50, right? 45, 50. So what's happening is that's when you have the last planet, which is what, Ketu, is it? In the seventh chakra, which is liberation, mukti. So that's why you see is the man from 42 to 50, he just thinks about, you know, going back to Godhead, you know, getting out of the family life, religious, not in an aggressive way, but in a very thoughtful, contemplative way, like that. So, and what he does is he contemplates what he did the rest of his life before that. It means when you're young, you make your plans, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and you go for it. So then you go for it, and then you have, you know, 25 years to try to do it, right? You know, you've gotten married, you had your families, your kids are big now, you know, like that. And, you know, so it works in that way. So then, in the Vedic paradigm, then it works like this. I got trained, I know what to do, I have my family, I do all my duties properly, I perform my, you know, economic and other social duties, I perform my religious duties, everything is done right, everybody's happy, everybody's satisfied, and I start to see now 25 years of this, you know, passions are going down, and actually all those way I thought I'd be happy by getting established, having my kids, you know, taking care of the women, you know, having so much wealth and facility and position that I've gotten by proper Krishna conscious work. But I see that actually it doesn't really have any substance, right? The only thing of substance was I did it for Krishna. I took care of my family for Krishna, raised my children for Krishna, made money for Krishna, had my positions and respect in the community for Krishna. That's the only thing. Otherwise, just having a wife, having kids, having money, having facility, having position, doesn't have anything, no taste, really. But the connection to Krishna and then all that nice association with devotees and kirtan and taking prasad and hearing Bhagavatam and preaching, that's really where the life is. So then, that contemplation that comes in that 42 to 50 then matures into solid vanaprast, right? Then that husband and wife, then they take vanaprast because they know We can move forward now. We did it. We did it well. We followed the Shastra. You can't squeeze anything more out of it, because the Shastra tells you how to squeeze it, right? Modern culture does not tell you how to squeeze it. Vedic culture, you want to get something out of the material nature? This is how it's done. And we've done it. We've followed the scriptures. We've all the different varieties and aspects. We've tried it from this angle, that angle. We did it. And we're satisfied that you can't be satisfied, right? And so then husband and wife can move forward, get more into their sadhana, reduce their need for economic development, just keep it to what's comfortable, and just do more and more just service in the temple and all that. Right? So that's the actual, what's the hardwired psychological, astrological, you know, thing that creates midlife crisis. And we see in the Vedic culture it works perfect. Right? The whole thing is perfectly designed that, you know, at 50 one moves on. One takes vanaprast, moves on. Because now it's the kids' time. Now they're the young guys out there. They have their ideals and they're going to, you know, make it in the material world. Right? You know, they got the piece of paper, it's got the stamp on it, the little ribbons, it's got the name on there. You hang it on the wall, it makes you a millionaire, right? Isn't that what they all tell you? Like that. In Assam, it means you can drive an auto rickshaw. Like that. In Assam, there's a government rule that only those that have university degrees can drive the auto rickshaws. No one else can drive them, right? You got to give something to the guys that have spent 20 years in the system, you know? So, like that. Now, the modern scenario is they're not trained, they stayed at home with their mom all day, and, you know, they grow up, they think that all women are going to deal with them like their mother, to fully just give them all attention, they have to give nothing back, they can be completely insensitive, but they'll love them anyway, and then their wife is freaked out, you know, everybody's freaked out, the daughters are freaked out, the whole society is freaked out, they, you know, then, you know, put their focus into their economic development, their career in that, because life is hell. I mean, family life is hell. So you get into your career, you go for it. Then when you get into that time, you do same way, start contemplating, and you go, everything I've done now has been useless. I've got nothing out of it. I have, may have position, I have that, but I'm not happy. My family doesn't care, no one cares. They're doing their own thing, you know, daughter's already pregnant, you know, son's already in jail, you know, and he's gotten someone else's daughter pregnant, you know, and like that, you know, like that. He's already gotten his car taken away from him, you know, like that, you know. I don't know if anybody knows people like that, but, you know, so like that, you understand? And so he starts to think, I gotta change, right? But the change is not vanaprast and devotional life, changes a completely new direction in life. Go back to school, take up a new career, right? You retire from one thing, but you take up another thing, do something wild, you know, go on a boat tour, move to another country. You know what I'm saying? The list is unlimited. And in this way, they start a new life, you know, sometimes even start a new family. You know, because by this time they figured out, you know, once they figure it out, they get confident, then they figure, well, it's the family's fault, not my fault. Like that. So they start a new family. They find some other, you know, old lady who, you know, she's going through the same thing and has dumped her family. And hey, they hit it off because, you know, whatever it is, you know, third time's a charm or whatever, tenth time's a charm or whatever. Depends who you are. Like that. What do you say? Yeah.
Young
yeah.
Lady.
Huh?
Young lady.
Oh, well, young lady, I mean, it's popular if they can go for it like that. But, like that, you know. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So, that's what the midlife crisis is. It's actually meant to work and mature one's Krishna consciousness and move one forward. But if not, then you see, you know, what's going on around us in the society. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you follow Western culture, then the midlife crisis will work that way. If you follow the Vedic culture, the midlife crisis will work in the other way. It's just a matter of what you want to do. You know, you want to be giving away your daughter when she gets married in a wheelchair, Or, you know, you're happy to hear that now that, you know, your grandchildren have grown up and they're getting married. You know, take your pick. You know, it's up to you, like that. Okay, just imagine a daughter thinking, what if my father dies before I get married? Because he's too old. That must be pretty freaky. You know what I'm saying? Pretty freaky. Especially nowadays, because the modern encourages the girls to get married much later, you know, after their degrees and their practices and, you know, like that. So, I mean, that means the guy's got to last till, you know, 75, 78 years old and still be chipper enough to make it down the aisle, right? You know? Does that make sense?
It's one more question. What happens between, after the next 25 years, between sannyas and vanaprastha?
What happens between sannyas and vanaprastha?
That time.
Between them.
No, it's like after the end of the vanaprastha.
After the end of vanaprastha and sannyas.
Yeah,
because by that time then, one has been through the world, one has actually directly interacted with it, then vanaprastha, then one practices that, one gets situated in the service and all that. If the vanaprastha situation is nice, one doesn't have to leave that. One can leave one's body in vanaprastha and one will not come back. Grihastha is not recommended because of the attachments, the cares, the worries. The vanaprastha, it's the kid's responsibility, right? The kid's responsibility for the grandkids. It's not my responsibility. Right, but a grihastha thinks, oh, what about this one, what about that one? So it's more dangerous to die in that time. So then they develop an indifference to the world. So then if it's necessary or needed, then, you know, the wife can then stay with the family or like that. She becomes a recluse. I mean, she just doesn't get involved socially in anything. She just does a service, does a sadhana, you know, gives advice to the family, gives encouragement, gives support. Like that, and the husband then in that state of indifference, then he then goes out into the world and preaches. Because now he can go out into the world again because he's indifferent to it. Right? Like that. It means vanaprastha removes himself from the world. Right? Brahmachari is not in the world because he doesn't have the intelligence or discrimination to deal with it. Right? Grihastha deals with the world directly. Vanaprastha pulls back from it again. Sannyasi then can go out into it again. Right? Grihastha is attached, the sannyasi is, what do you say?
Indifferent.
Indifferent. Like that. The vanaprastha is the detachment. I have attachment, I'm pulling back from it. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's a natural kind of thing. It all fits, you know? Like that. Yes? For vanaprastha. I mean, the natural age is that of 50, but whatever stage... The point is this. Vanaprastha, it's either a time when one takes... One doesn't have the mentality, but one takes it up as the time to practice it, because it's the good... It's the naturally good time to practice it, like we said before. The kid walks at a certain age. If they practice walking, they'll walk. So if by this time they haven't developed that mentality, you know, means, but there's an interest in it, then this is the time when they can develop it, right? But if it comes earlier, it can come whenever it comes. Vanaprastha basically means that you just maintain, materially you just maintain. You know, you've already figured out what is the comfortable lifestyle, what works for you. You don't need to expand it, right? So that means, technically speaking, means the wife is satisfied. The husband's done a good job, the wife is satisfied. Then it works, because stri means to expand. So vanaprastha means you don't expand anymore. So that means the wife has to be satisfied. So that means the husband dealt with it very nicely, she is satisfied. So when they're both satisfied that there's nothing in material endeavor, then they can be vanaprastha, like that. So they focus the life more on their sadhana, service, and these kind of things like that. And it works very nicely. But depending upon the social environment and that, they may not adjust, let's say, how they dress or do anything like that. because others then may comment or make comments, and you know, like means there's enough gossip going around. You don't need to start anything more like that. Does that make any sense? But at any age, it's just like their mentalities. Just like sannyas generally is like, you know, from 70 means from up to 25, that's brahmacharya. 25 to 50 is grihastha. 50 to 75 is vanaprastha. 75 to 100 is sannyas. You know, that's of course when people would always live to 100. These days, then you might have to adjust things down a bit, you know. But we see is like Shankaracharya took sannyas at 5, 6. Madhvacharya took sannyas at 12. So they were quite comfortable with it, you know. Like that. So it's whenever it works. You know, Lord Chaitanya took sannyas at 24. Like that instead of 50. Prabhupada took sannyas at 55. You know, so it's just whenever it works. Actually, no, I think it was 57. I think Vanaprastha was 55. You know, so just whatever it works according to the situation you're in and your duties and your responsibilities. Right? Ramanuja took sannyas when he found that it just, you know, the family life wasn't progressive anymore. Like that. So it's, you know, so he wouldn't have been that old. I don't know what age he took sannyas. You know what age he took sannyas? Ramanuja. Yes. Can vanaprasthas preach? Yeah, that's what they do. Sadhana means some kind of. They may be more into austerity, more into preaching. Means the whole point is this performance of duty. But that duties are that of sadhana. Right? Rather than of raising the family. I'm saying austerity means the proper performance of your duties. So if you properly perform the duties of brahmachari, that makes you austere. You properly perform the duties of a grihastha, that makes you austere. Right? Does that make sense? So austerity is the proper performance of duties. Sacrifice means doing voluntarily giving up something for someone else. Right? That's why sacrifice is yajna. That's why Sankirtan is considered the best yajna. Because then the sacrifice is that of knowledge. Right? Excuse me. So the preaching. So vanaprasthas, they preach. They have the dual advantage of being able to preach philosophically and being able to preach culturally. You know what I'm saying? Because they have been through the grihastha ashram, they've raised their family, they've been successful like this. Therefore, then the young couples, you know, who are new at it and, you know, think they, you know everything about it, then we'll be willing to listen to them, right? And at the same time, those who are coming to, you know, the bridge between grihastha and vanaprastha and how to work that out, then they'll be very inclined to listen to those grihasthas that have successfully become vanaprasthas, right? Because it's said that, you know, a man with a wife is always respected, like that. Just by getting married, his respect in the community goes up. Like that. He's trusted, he's respectable, he's responsible. All these just come automatically. You know, just like, you know, you have a kid and you become the world's greatest parent. So it's just automatic. Right? So, like that. So, according to Shastra, then automatically you become respected by the community. Right? So then, in that way, then the vanaprastha is more trusted. Right? Means the sannyasi can tell you all these same things. Nobody cares, because what do they know? They're not married, they don't really know what you're going through, they don't really understand the trauma, you know, they don't really understand the meaning of the responsibility, they're free, they just do whatever they like. So technically, socially, they're not, trusted or respected. So traditionally, the vanaprasthas are the ones that can actually preach to the grihasthas on the technical points of grihastha ashram. The sannyasis, they can, encourage, you know, philosophy, establish the different things, set the directions like that. But in the little details, not necessarily. Maybe individuals will respect them, but in general, not. It's a general thing. like that. Because the thing, what would they know? Right? Because especially, generally speaking, the neophyte is working on third class intelligence. That unless you do it, you can't learn it. The concepts of learning by hearing, which is the first class intelligence, learning by seeing, which is the second class intelligence, that's not considered, you know, top intelligence in the, you know, pragmatic minimalists, you know, handbook. Unless you've done it, you don't know. So third class intelligence rules, you know, that's it. It's the way, the light, and what's the other one?
Truth.
And the truth, yes. The way, the light, and the truth. Yes. They marry too late. What, according to Vedic, what is the time to get married? Ah. Well, it depends upon who you are and what you want to do. A Brahmin who only studies one Veda, then he would get married at 16. Kshatriyas also would get married at 16, Vaishyas at 16. Right? Nowadays it won't fly, you have to be at least 18. Otherwise, legally, you know, there'll be a problem because you've, how do you say it? Does that make sense? Right? Because girls under the age of 17 are a problem, right? Like that. So then, 16. Then if you study two Vedas, then it'll be 25. If you study three Vedas, then it'll be 32. That would be the tradition for the boys. Girls, then, depending upon who they were or their intelligence, like that, very, very emotional, sentimental girls would be married at like 4 or 5 years old. Right? They would still stay at their parents' house. They wouldn't go to their husband's house. Then when they attain puberty, there'd be a second marriage. Then they would stay at the husband's house. Right? Other girls would get married around 8, 9, 10, that group. Then there's the 11, 12 before they hit puberty. Then there's the one after they hit puberty, 14. 14 plus, like that. So that was the tradition. So once they've hit puberty, then it's just a matter of time. Just the later it is, the more neurotic, that's all. The husband should be older than the wife. You've heard that. The reason for that is, I mean, that's the general rule. But the reason for why you don't means you're 12 years old, you don't go looking at the other 12-year-olds. It doesn't mean you go looking at the 2-year-olds either. But, wow, check out that 2-year-old. Real cutie, huh? She wears Pampers. Yeah. Really, well... My girl wears Huggies. You know? Okay. So, is that like this? There's a phenomena that a girl, and this, of course, all respects to the great vocal acharyas, but a girl is a girl, and then one day she becomes a woman. Right? So when she hits puberty, she thinks like a woman. Right? She's thinking about her house, about her children, about her lifestyle, about money, about commitment, about all those kind of things. It's not a joke to them. Right? So for them, boys means something solid, something real. Right? So that's there. But now, so it's girl, woman. Right? So, but boys are different. Boys are boys. Then when they hit puberty, they become, by default, they become punks, not men. Right? Then, through the training process, which is traditionally known as Gurukula, then they become men. Right? Because by the association of men, a boy becomes a man. Right? Not by the association of women. Right? There's other terminologies for that kind of mentality. Right? Like that. So Therefore, until they're trained into men, they shouldn't get married. Right? So that means the boy and girl are the same age, but then the girl becomes a woman, but the boy becomes a punk. So he doesn't become a man till this age. So a man should marry a woman, not a punk. Right? Punks shouldn't get married. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So a man marries a woman. So that means there will be a gap. Minimum gap is considered 3 years, right? Because the point is like this: the boys, when they're out, when they're there and they're looking at the girls and want to be out and hang out with the girls, they're just thinking, "Oh, it's nice to be with the girl. This is fun." So that's a punk. That's a kid. The girl is thinking about marriage and house and facility and kids and that. So she's way ahead of the boy. So the boy thinks he's so smart, but he's a kid. She's a woman. Right? Isn't it? So you would think it's funny if you have a woman and a kid get married. Right? Isn't it? So, but that's what's going on. Unless the punk's made into a man, then... Does that make sense? So, therefore, through training process, he has to become a man. So, generally, then it takes some gap. Right? So, therefore, it can be any length of time. Right? But 10 is considered an ideal. Nice, you know, because when the boy is 10 years ahead of the girl, he'll actually have the same maturity as the girl. Materially, not spiritually. Spiritually, he'd be way ahead. But materially, he'll have the same. Does that make sense? That responsibility, that commitment, all those things will be the same. That's why it's recommended the boys are older than the girls. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the system. But whatever works. The main thing is the boy is mature enough that the girl is comfortable with. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why you'd see as the minimum, generally the girl would be 11, 12, like that, getting married, the boy would be 16. You know? Like Abhimanyu and Uttara, right? So then, like that. So there's a 3-4 year difference, like that. But otherwise, the boys would finish their studies at 25, get married at 25, and the girl would be, you know, in her early teens, like that. Does that make sense? So that would be the tradition because it's based on the mentality. It's a science. But nowadays, the training, this and that, it doesn't really... So basically, main thing is that both of them should be above 18 or something. Hey, okay, Jaiko. It works. Kind of. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is the boy should be mature enough and committed enough that the woman is confident. Does that make sense? Because if the boy is too punky, or maybe romantic, but in reality, she can't be confident. You know what I'm saying? So these are the general rules, as we said before, but it may happen in between, you know, it may adjust according to the individual. Does that make sense? That's the general rule. Individual rule, you have to see time, place, and circumstance. Okay? Yes? So we'll end now.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.